You're listening to Thursday Night Tailgate with Chris Mascaro and Bob Lazzari, where NFL legends live on. Back to you, boys.
Hear me the lot.
All right, now joining us here on Thursday Night Tailgate is Arthur Most. Let me give you some background on Arthur. He's from Portsmouth, Virginia, played his college ball at James Madison, where he was a four-year letterman. He was named to the Colonial Athletics Association All-Conference team in 2008 and 2009. And 2009 was a great year for him because not only was he named All-Conference, he was named Team Defensive MVP, and he played in the All-Star game. He was also named a first-team All-American, and he won the Buck Buchanan Award as the conference's Defensive Player of the Year. He remains second all-time in school history in sacks with 29. Helped James Madison be named the 2008 FCS ECAC Team of the Year when they went 12-2 and 8-0 in the conference. Back in October, he was inducted into the JMU Athletics Hall of Fame. He was drafted in the sixth round in 2010 by the Buffalo Bills, and he played in the league from 2010 to 2018 with the Bills, Steelers, and Cardinals. Did a wonderful video for us, as I mentioned at the top of the show, celebrating our ninth anniversary last month, which you guys can find on our website, ThursdayNightTailgate.com. He's also written a wonderful book, Moat's Theory of Life, which you can buy online at MoatsTheory.com. And we're honored he is with us tonight here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Arthur, thanks for coming on the show. Chris and Bob here.
Welcome.
Yes, indeed. How are y'all doing today?
Oh, fantastic, Arthur. Congratulations, my friend, on the Athletics Hall of Fame at JMU.
Man, I really appreciate that. You know, it's something that was very humbling to get that honor to be named a Hall of Fame inductee. Anytime you're inducted into anyone's Hall of Fame, it's always a big deal. But that's something, you know, for me that I remember as a true freshman or even as a recruit thinking about stuff like that. It's just like, that doesn't seem realistic. And then, you know, for it to finally happen, it's a crazy feeling right now, man. But definitely appreciate it.
So, Arthur, you know, as a kid growing up in Virginia, was James Madison always where you wanted to go? I have to imagine a lot of schools were out there recruiting you. Why James Madison?
Yeah, man. So in terms of where I really wanted to go, I was a big Florida State fan growing up from a football standpoint. Loved watching Warrick Dunn. And obviously, I was a diehard Cowboys fan. So when I found out that Deion Sanders had played at Florida State, that's ultimately where I wanted to go. Problem was, they didn't want me to go there because they didn't recruit me. So from there, you know, you look at the teams that are recruiting you. And at the time, I mean, I had double-digit scholarship offers pretty much anywhere, Conference USA and MAC and all of the 1AA schools. And what it really came down to was JMU at the time in 2004 had just won a national championship. So in 2005, when they're recruiting me, all I'm hearing about is the fact that they just won a national championship. They had games on ESPN and ESPN2, and they had guys that were getting, you know, scouted to go to the NFL. So when I thought of the fact that I could play in an area where they're winning, you know, in terms of their on-field productivity, education-wise, I'm going to get a great degree from here. It was only 3.5 hours from my hometown. I was like, you know, this makes perfect sense to come here versus walking on somewhere where they really don't love me. At least here, I know they love me. They're offering me a full scholarship, and I'm going to get a chance to play early. So that was the biggest thing that went into me deciding to go to JMU.
And Arthur, you talk about earning your degree. You earned your degree in political science, and I read that you're working on your master's degree, and certainly we could use some intelligent people in politics right now. Is that right? Congrats on the master's.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, man, I finished it my last year in Pittsburgh, man. It was something that I really was passionate about doing because I always would tell people that, hey, man, you want to push yourself, right? You never want to be complacent, and education is key. I would always talk about that, but I felt like a hypocrite. I'm not going to lie, because I had my undergrad, but I felt like I was still being complacent. I wasn't really pushing myself the way that I would always tell people to push themselves. So from there, I said, man, let's go out here and chase after this master's degree. And I was able to find an online program at Empire State College, and I was able to literally take online classes while I was playing. It was the craziest scenario, but it was so awesome because I felt like me accomplishing a master's degree while playing, it further solidified the importance of education, but also it took away any excuse that people would have in terms of, well, I don't have time, I'm busy, I got a family. Because literally, like I said, for me, I was in the middle of being a starting linebacker for the Pittsburgh Steelers on an AFC championship run. While being married and having three kids, I was still able to find time. So if I could do it, trust me, anyone can do it.
But to that end, right, your degree in political science, I mean, for crying out loud, we could certainly use some intelligent guys in politics right about now. Any chance we could see you run for office? A little help?
Listen, I want zero parts of office right now. On either side. Either side. I'm like, I don't care. I'm good on all of that. Keep me in the sports world.
Worth a try. Bob, questions for Arthur?
Arthur, it's great to have you on the show. We love your enthusiasm. And I want to take you back to when you got drafted by Buffalo, sixth round in 2010. Arthur, tell me your expectations at the time and how that all became reality when Buffalo came calling.
Yeah, man. So in terms of my expectations going into the draft, I definitely thought I was going a lot higher. I thought I was going fourth round, fifth round at worst, but it ended up happening that I went in the sixth round. And from there, coming into Buffalo, my whole career, whether from high school, college, I always was a 4-3 hand in the ground DN. And I literally remember George Edwards, who was my defensive coordinator at the time, telling me, hey, you're switching to inside linebacker, 3-4 Mike linebacker. And I'm just like, what? I don't know anything about coverage outside of playing Madden. I can't tell you anything more than cover three because I don't think we got enough safeties for that. So how can we run any other defenses? So it took me a while, my first year, to really understand coverages, to really understand the linebacker position. So the expectations, they weren't really high. In fact, my expectations for myself that first year, I thought numerous times that I was going to get released in training camp and during the preseason just because I wasn't grasping it. But everything ended up working out, and it was more so less thinking about making plays or, excuse me, less thinking about executing a play the correct way or not, and more so just playing hard. If the ball is in the area, go get the ball and tackle the ball. We'll correct everything else later on. So for me, that was the biggest thing that they got me out of that first year. But honestly, man, that rookie year training camp preseason, yeah, my expectations for myself were terrible because whew, that was definitely my worst preseason ever.
And Arthur, you're a guy that spent a good part of your younger days in the South, and here you are spending 4 years in Buffalo. I'm in New England, Arthur, and Buffalo takes New England to a different level with the lake effect and everything. Tell some of our fans out there something you remember or just the entire experience of playing football in Buffalo in December and January.
Listen, I'm going to give you two very simple scenarios to let you know what it was like playing up there from a snow standpoint. Now, obviously, we've all seen the horror stories. Oh, man, they're snowed in. They can't leave. They're snowed in. You got to get the snowmobiles to bring them to the stadium. We've seen all that. But the two things that let me know Buffalo was very different from a weather standpoint. My rookie year, I'm reporting for rookie minicamp. It is May, mind you. No exaggeration. It's snowed my last day there for rookie minicamp.
Wow.
In May, there was snow. I looked around and I said, oh my God, what is going on here? And they're like, oh, this happens. It snows all the time here. We're like, no, it's May. It's supposed to be hot. And it's like, no. In Buffalo, May, you can still get snow. That was the first thing, right? So now, fast forward to the season. The season is here. It's November. Family's coming up for Thanksgiving. And I'm like, all right. Mom's flying in. This is perfect. At the time, I have a Charger, rear wheel drive. I'm not even thinking about snow. And we get 32 inches in a span of 60 minutes. 32 inches of snow. I literally could not make it home. I tried to drive my Charger, the rear wheel drive Charger, home. Spent out like 10 times. I thought I was going to die. Ended up walking the rest of the way. Yeah, those were my two inches where I said, man, this is in. Saying I had never seen anything like that. And the scary part was this. Me from the South, I'm thinking everything's going to shut down. No practice. Everything's canceled. You better go to the store, get your canned goods. My coach calls me and he says, hey, I know you're from the South and you've never seen snow like this, but be on time to work tomorrow at 6 a.m. And I will never forget it was me, CJ Spiller, and Alex Carrington, all from the Southern part. And we're just trying to figure out, how are we going to get to work tomorrow? Because it was crazy. I'd never seen anything like that before. But everyone knows
Arthur,
that was normal.
That's called lake effect, Chris. And Arthur's very familiar with it.
Oh, wow. Unfortunately, I'm too familiar with it.
Arthur, I got to get your thoughts. I'm from Pittsburgh. I'm a huge Steelers fan. What we saw on Sunday night was something that I, you know, never want to have to live through again. What's your assessment of what has gone wrong in Pittsburgh?
Yeah, man, what happened Sunday night was unacceptable. When you talk about historic playoff losses in the past decade or two, this is going to be debated as one of the worst ones. Obviously, the 2017 game against the Jaguars, and then you got the 2011 season with the Broncos as well. So this is in that same ballpark. When you think about the fact that it was Cleveland, the little brothers of the division, along with everything that was going on with them from a COVID standpoint, there was zero reason why the Steelers should have came out and looked the way that they did, but even more so, zero reason why they should have ever lost that game. To me, I just thought that as a whole, man, especially the last part of the season, the final six games, they looked older. I mean, Ben struggled down the stretch. Obviously, I think he had 10 interceptions over that final six-game span compared to four over the first 11 games. Then, obviously, the offensive line, they started to really show their lack of ability to create any type of movement up front, and that ultimately hurt the running game even more. And from there, it was just the popcorn effect, right? You hear Coach Tomlin talk about, all right, first this group messes up. Okay, this group gets it under control. Now this group messes up. It was each part of this offense and defense and special teams taking turns having issues. And ultimately, the Browns, they did what they were supposed to do. They capitalized on the mistakes. They stuck to their game plan. And, I mean, you got to tip your cap to them. And that's the biggest thing. Like, to me, seeing the Browns do that was very impressive because up until that moment, we hadn't seen the Browns show up like that in big games. We've seen them play well and lose, but never play well and win in a big-time game like that. So, to me, man, it's definitely you tip your cap to them. And I'm excited to see how this division continues to play out going forward because they definitely closed that gap in love with the playing field a lot right now.
So, yeah, I'm with you. And I tell you what, watching that game and knowing you were going to be on the show this week, I was kind of hoping you were there in Pittsburgh and you were going to dust off the 55 and come out of the locker room in the second half. You're only 32. We could have used you.
Hey, listen. Funny thing, I was actually down there doing some of the pregame media stuff. And literally, I remember walking in and I'm seeing some of the guys from the locker room. And I'm like, hey, Mosey, you still got that, baby. I know you still got the juice. And I'm like, nope, we done put that down. We're going right over here to this booth and get to talking. you know how that playoff energy goes, man. You get excited.
No doubt. you know, going back to the Bills, I mean, obviously they're still alive. So you got one of your former teams still alive. I'm assuming you're all in on Buffalo. What do you think their opportunity is this weekend against Baltimore?
Man, this is honestly one of my favorite games this weekend. I said I'm conflicted between this game and obviously Saints and Bucks. I think that one of those two games are going to be the games of the weekend. But I think this is a great opportunity for Buffalo because, number one, they match up well against Baltimore in terms of Baltimore. They're the way they run the ball. They're not the group anymore that's just blowing guys up front, but they still do a great job running the ball. Obviously, the misdirection of the zone reads and things they do with Lamar will definitely create some issues. But Tremaine Edmonds and Matt Milano, they play well in space. They are built for the one-on-one in space. Now, obviously, they struggle a little bit when they have to face a power attack like a Jonathan Taylor and that Colts offense. But the Ravens, the way they're going to attack them is going to be drastically different. And then, obviously, when the Bills are on offense, you got the receivers and obviously the high-end play of Josh Allen versus Marlon Humphrey and Marcus Peters. So, I mean, it's going to be one of those get your popcorn ready. I'm excited the whole way. I think it's going to be a high-scoring affair, though, between both of these teams, though.
So thinking about both teams' fan base, the Steelers fan base, Bills fan base, you both very passionate about their team. Kind of give me an idea which one it was more fun to play in front of.
So this is the thing, right? Both fan bases, as you said, man, are awesome. I think the biggest difference between the two is this. Steeler Nation is just so much more because they win so much. So granted, I think that the Bills are more passionate because they've had to endure so many losing seasons. And even in those losing seasons, those fans are still showing up, packing the stadium, right? They still go crazy, diehard, wearing the Zubas, going through tables, ketchup, mustard showers. They're going to do all of that. In Pittsburgh, we all know when the team was 8-8 last year, a lot of fans were kind of getting on the fence about it. When the team was struggling in that second half of the season this year, a lot of fans were acting like they were about to jump off the cliff. So to me, I just think that even though it's so much more of Steeler Nation, because they've been winning for so long, you have a lot more front runner style fans versus being true, just die hard. I don't care if the team doesn't win at all. I'm going to show up and be in my gear. I don't think the Steeler Nation has as many of those style of fans, whereas the Bills, they do.
Bob, one more for Arthur.
Sure, Arthur. As a former defensive player, I'm going to ask you what I asked. We had Victor Green on last week, a defensive back
to
play with the Jets, and I asked him the same thing, and I'm going to ask you because I saw a lot more of it this past week, and Arthur, that these defensive players are there's no more tackling going on, Arthur. It's all hitting, and
yes,
you know, short
so
of guys,
you
know, hurdling others, as you know, you see a lot of the running backs doing that now. But short of that, Arthur, I saw so many guys. It's just the Matador style now. I mean, have we seen the end of form tackling and wrapping up?
Listen, it drives me nuts because obviously, being a guy who played in the 2010 timeframe when I came in, they were still using fullbacks predominantly. You were still having to run the ball and legit wrap up these bigger body backs. I don't know when this transition started where we're just going to hit, meaning I'm going to run at you full speed, but I'm not going to wrap up. So it makes a big thud, looks good for a pitcher, but ultimately the runner keeps running. I don't know who thought that was a good idea to start doing that, but that has to get out the game. Number one, you're going to hurt yourself just always trying to fly in there and torpedo somebody. But number two, you're never going to tackle these guys. I mean, at the NFL level, you know this. The contact balance is too good. These backs, these receivers don't go down off the hits. No, they are taught to move their legs. So to me, that's something that definitely has to get out the game, man. You got to wrap these guys up and go back to just the basic fundamentals of tackling, not just hitting.
Arthur, before we let you go, like I mentioned in your intro, you've written a book, fantastic read. It's one of the things I started to read a little bit about it online, Moat's Theory of Life. I ordered it online. Can't wait to get it. Talk to our listeners about what your book's all about.
Yeah, man, I definitely appreciate that. And for those that are looking for it, it's available at moattheory.com. So just moattheory.com. And basically, man, the book is it's a self-help inspirational style book. It's not an autobiography. I include my personal stories in here, but ultimately, man, it's a literature in terms of it's based off of my last name, M-O-A-T-S. So M, we talk about making happiness a priority. A lot of people do things for other people and do things with other people's happiness in mind, but always put themselves on the back burner. So I thought it was important that you talk about making your own happiness a priority. And I, you know, display different ways of how to do that. Oh, openness yields strength. I was really thinking about my guys here because how often are we always Mr. Machismo, right? Hey, what's wrong? Nothing. Are you tired? No. Are you hungry? No. Why? Because I'm a man. I got to be perfect all the time. But you're not perfect. It's okay to be sad. It's okay to show your vulnerability. But ultimately, you're doing that, you're only going to make yourself stronger and those around you stronger because of the understanding. So that's why I talk about that in O. Then when we get to A, I talk about actively seeking to inspire people because I think it's important to inspire others. And I think you have to look for it because the thing is, you never know once you plant that seed, once you pay it forward, what it can grow into, how this person ultimately can change their trajectory of life because you went out there and did something positive for them. And then when we go to chapter T, turning fear into focus. People everyone has fear in terms of fear of failure, fear of rejection, fear of not being good enough. But instead of allowing that fear to give you paralysis and you not do anything, take that fear and make it a pushing force and let it push you out there so you can take that chance and ultimately really reach your full potential. And then the final chapter is S. And I just break it down as smile. Spread my inner love everywhere because I feel like we as people, we as humans are all good people at our core. And it's important to bring that out. And the simplest way to do that is by smiling. If I smile at you, it is contagious. You will smile back and so forth and so forth. And you never know. I mean, you could be having the worst day and somebody smiles at you and it just brightens you up for a moment, just gives you that little bit of hope. And ultimately, that's what I was thinking about when I wrote the book. And I mean, everything I've heard from it in terms of reviews, people love it. They feel like it's definitely helped them out. So I'm excited for it. And I hope whoever does purchase it, man, that it can help them out in the same way. So once again, it's just moattheory.com, and that's where it's available at.
Arthur, one more thing before we let you go. And our final segment of this show every week is our Spotlight on the Positive, where we feature stories about players doing great things in their community. You've been nominated by both the Bills. Yeah, you've been nominated by both the Bills and the Steelers as their Walter Payton Man of the Year Award for the great things you're doing in your community. Talk about that and what that means to you.
Man, honestly, throughout my career, next to being inducted into the JMU Football Hall of Fame, that is what I am most proud of. Anytime you're doing things in the community and you're trying to make a difference, you don't do it for recognition. But when you're doing it so much that people can't help but to recognize it, not just in one location, but in multiple locations, right? Buffalo and here in Pittsburgh. To me, that was very humbling because all I'm trying to do when I'm out here in the community is just put a smile on one person's face. Give just one person hope. Just let this one person know that somebody is thinking about them. That's literally the whole purpose when we go out here and do things in the community. So the fact that, like I said, it received so much recognition that they wanted to award me with something, man, it's very humbling. But ultimately, I just want to keep making a difference. And I feel like if we can just reach one person at a time, eventually the world will be a better place. But we can't save the world tomorrow. We got to start with just one person at a time. And that's the approach I take, man.
Arthur, before we let you go, let our listeners know, how can they stay up to date with all the great things you're doing, whether it's following you online or it's over social media?
Yeah, absolutely. So for any of my media content, whether it's my podcast, whether it's some of my film review breakdowns, some of my live content that I do with my followers, just go to youtube.com/ArthurMoats55 or just type my name in on YouTube and all my information will pop up. And then on social media, whether it's Instagram, Twitter, @TheBody52. So just DABody52.
Arthur, it's been a blast having you as part of the show. We can't thank you enough for the great video you did for us for our anniversary, plus spending time with us tonight. We hope we get the opportunity to have you come back and join us again sometime.
No doubt. I'm just hoping that I get inducted into the show Hall of Fame. I've seen all these other names up here. I'm just trying to figure out how do I get on that list.
Keep coming back, my friend. That's how you do it.
There we go.
Great.
Arthur, take care. All the best to you, Shonda, and the rest of your family. We look forward to having you back soon.
You stay well.
I definitely appreciate it. Look forward to it as well.
Take care.
All right. Take care, Arthur. That's a great Arthur Most, Bob. You know, you want to talk about a guy doing great things. First of all, you know, you're all about, you know, the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award, and we talk about that every week in the Spotlight on the Positive. But then, you know, when I was kind of going back through all of Arthur's stuff, obviously the enthusiasm is really important to us and how great he was to do that video. But an educated guy, got his master's now, father was a Marine, that's near and dear to us. His mother was a math teacher, near and dear to us. And then, you know, all the great things he's doing in his community, and you throw on top of that the great enthusiasm. Boy, you want to talk about a guy who's a complete package.
And how can we not put him in our show Hall of Fame down the road, Chris? Because number one, he wants to come back on. You know, he's going to come back on another half dozen times. And his personality is just infectious and his positivity. So let's keep getting him on. And I can't wait till we speak with him again.
All right. We've got our next guest, Tony Collins, hanging on the line. We're going to get to Tony in our 5-star picks of the week. On the other side of this real quick station break.